Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is the man who can probably talk better than me right now, but chooses not to say many words, Mr. Spencer Williams.
What's up?
Like I said, also with us is the intern slash part-timer slash stenographer slash coffee bringer who brings no coffee slash I need to be nicer to slash I probably won't slash ensign slash former Demian Amy.
Demian? Who's a Demian?
I was Demian. Did you not see did you not see
already.
Beowulf? That's not it. Damon.
Oh, I read it.
Anyway, we got a great show in store as we are still on the curtails of the wonderful Halloween season, and we have decided to do a review on the recently dropped stop-motion animation feature on Netflix, Wendell and Wild. So stick around as we dive into that and get into the details. But before we do, Spencer, give them opening credits.
Tune in each and every Wednesday morning on all your favorite streaming platforms and over on our website at filmlosophers.com. Also, connect with us on social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101.
That's right. We got a website. And on that website, we have all of our episodes, allegedly over 300, all about stuff like movies. Yeah, where you can check out action, comedy, anything that you're interested in terms of movies, we got it. Check us out, filmlosophers.com. You can also check us out wherever podcasts are streaming, places on your phone. Also on the web, anywhere else you listen to podcasts, from anywhere from iTunes, Google Play, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, iHeart. You can tune into your heart's desires and find us there. Give us a follow, give us a subscribe. Let us know what you think. Drop us a comment in the line below. Also, if you feel like we deserve it, give us a 5-star review. We've earned it.
We have.
That's right. We work hard, dang it.
Mm-hmm. We work hard for them likes.
That's right. And we'll give you the social links at the end of the show. Funny enough, usually we take this time to talk about some specific things, but I got nothing. So how are you guys doing?
First I want to ask, how are you doing?
Oh my God.
Because it seems like you're falling apart.
We just started. You know, my mouth is like, I got that YouTube lag going on. My mouth is not catching up to what my brain is trying to say.
You don't need real-time YouTube lag.
I'm just saying, it was a real thing growing up. My laptop was already doing some stuff like that earlier. It's just all over the place.
It's lagging?
My brain, yes.
Your laptop?
And my brain, yes.
You had already...
No, my mouth is lagging, not my brain. Here right now, in the midst of this beautiful Northern California weather, we are finally getting some rain. And needless to say, if ever there was a season for staying indoors and just binging your favorite streaming show or movie or even favorite downloaded TV show, this is that time. This has been one of those weeks because it's been raining. Oh, it rained yesterday and it's supposed to rain today. It's been one of those times where it's like, I really wish I wasn't here at work. I wish I was home. And I'm wishing and hoping that my boss doesn't listen to my episode. Now that I think about it. Because it's just, I don't know. What do you guys think is perfect movie watching weather? Wow, I really stumped you.
Such not a way I think about like, movie watching weather. I watch movies whenever.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like it's movie watching all the time, but like around this time, especially during fall when it's cold, you have to like bundle up because you don't want to turn on the heat because it's too dang expensive. Yeah, that's a real thing. You bundle up and you grab your laptop, your tablet, your iPad, or jump in front of the TV and you just start streaming Firefly or something of the sorts. Like, I wouldn't mind sitting down and watching like all the seasons of like Are You Afraid of the Dark or Goosebumps or Twilight Zone episodes. I go back. I go to those. Don't look at me like that. If you guys had the opportunity to take a whole day in the midst of kind of like this weather, what would you bundle up and watch?
Ooh. TV show or movie?
Anything. I don't know.
So my go-to...
Like I said, there was no goal with this first conversation. Well, I was just like, you know
so
what?
So my... See, that's the funny thing, because my like comfort show will always and forever be Pushing Daisies. I don't care. It rotates between an entire year during their seasons, so you get like spring episodes and summer episodes.
But there's only two seasons.
I know, it's technically one and a half and a whole bunch of, you know, comic books, but I still enjoy it because nobody says it's not time for a murder mystery with a person that can wake people from the dead.
That's literally what happens in the series.
Ronan the Accuser from Guardians.
It's the most sissified version of Ronan the Accuser. So
I mean, it's either that or if I'm on a Lee Pace kick, The Fall, which I know I've brought up before. But that one, because of just like the vibe in it, it makes me want to be inside like a big blanket with something warm to drink and socks on, because I don't like socks unless I'm sick. Or I'm feeling cozy.
You should see when this woman comes into the studio. Her feet look like Fred Flintstone had been running through the asphalt.
Excuse me?
It's like, what? You might as well tar those bad
boys. My toenails are
painted. That doesn't mean that they can't stop traffic once you put it down. You
know, why did this turn into like a roast of me and my feet?
Eddie, you're doing a great job of being nicer to Amy.
I know. I've been working at it, and this is progress. What about you, Spence?
I will always default to sci-fi because that is always a comfort to me. Mm. So generally, it's probably going to be Star Trek.
Nice.
Or recently Doctor Who.
By the way,
I wanted to tell him.
Okay.
We found out where all of the Star Trek movies moved to.
Where'd they go?
To HBO Max.
Dang it!
All of them.
That doesn't even make any sense.
I know. Nope.
Oh,
it doesn't.
My gosh.
Because literally, like... I think you were the one that sent me the message, and you're like, Amy, you need to look on HBO Max right now. And I was like, what? What's
recently
going on?
Recently added. Look at the recently added.
And
it just says Star Trek collection. From motion picture all the way to Nemesis.
Do they have the 4K motion picture?
I think so, yeah.
Okay. Everything on HBO is supposed to be
that
in 4K for movies.
Okay, so recently we had our Star Trek month.
Yeah, we
talked
about it. It was all on Paramount Plus, and then October 1st rolled around, and it all just disappeared somewhere.
It went to HBO.
Yeah, apparently went to HBO, which is ultra confusing, because back in March, they released the 4K remaster of the motion picture, so that means it was on there for less than a year before it went away.
Yep.
This is just going to cause more piracy.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Especially if I can't find where things went, or if people for some reason are like, I don't want to make money. This is not on any service. Why?
Hmm. Hashtag bring back LimeWire. This is like around this time. It's a hodgepodge for me because right now we're literally in the middle of holiday central when it comes to, because this is the only time where you have three holidays back to back to back. Other times you have like, you know, Valentine's Day in February, and then you have 4th of July in July, major holidays. Amy's looking like, wait, what about all the other holidays, like Arbor Day?
No,
we don't talk about those. We don't talk about Bruno.
I was thinking it was like Veterans Day is coming up the second week in November. And
what
then,
movie do you watch during Veterans Day? Go ahead, tell me.
I don't watch Saving Private Ryan. That's a given.
But you don't watch anything for
Veterans
Day.
Because the veterans are still alive.
So, what?
Yeah, keep going.
Anyway, so I don't know. It's like a lot of times when I get stuck around this time, it usually goes back to a couple things that are a little bit more fallish, I guess. Mm. Things like Over the Garden Wall.
Mm. Oh, did you see?
Yeah, Cartoon Network had it streaming for like 3 days straight. Mm-hmm. It was great. It was wonderful. I just literally left my TV on in the room and just let it play in the background.
I was at work and it just saw a pop up. I was like, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
You're like, I should push this button. It's a good button.
But I also fall into the same framework as Spencer with sci-fi. And honestly, I will binge, you know, the entire season of Firefly, including the movie. And then just... And then re-jump on that train, that emotional roller coaster again, and start from the beginning. But yeah, I mean, in the midst of fall, it's interesting because I think at one point in time we talked about Thanksgiving movies, and there are no Thanksgiving movies really. And we're not talking about Thanksgiving.
Dang it.
And I don't think I had brought up. I had brought up the Thanksgiving Peanuts episode.
That's not a movie.
And it wasn't considered a movie.
This is from the same woman who tried to convince us that Ichabod Crane, that the Legend of Sleepy Hollow, Ichabod, and his brother Drew.
His brother Drew.
I don't know. Maybe he did. You don't know. Did you ever read if he had brothers or sisters?
He didn't have a brother
or
sister.
Know?
Because he was a lone schoolmaster that came to that town. Mm-hmm. And he was looking to get hooked up with a lady.
Well, in the sequel, Sleepy Hollow 2.
Yeah.
Yeah, the brother.
He did. And
Sleepy
his brother
Hollow 2 is the Johnny Depp one?
Because you had Ichabod in the first one, then you had Ichatrue in the next one. and then the third one's Ica Steve. So,
Ica Joe.
Ica Joe. So it's, I don't know, it's difficult to really find movies that kind of highlight this time of season, so, or this time of year for the holiday.
Thanksgiving.
So you've never even seen it.
I don't have to support Spencer in his dreams.
That's horrible.
There is a scene.
You are an uninformed voter.
Impersonates a police officer.
A killer
turkey.
And
people believe him?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's ridiculous.
It's horrible. And they made a sequel.
Yeah.
Actually, didn't they skip? Yeah, they skipped two and they went right to three.
Good people. Yeah. Good space. People. There's space for everything in the middle.
Yeah.
Like a cookie.
What?
Like an Oreo cookie. There's space in the middle for everybody.
There's space in the middle. Okay, we're not going to go on this, you know, backroom conversation here. Let's talk about our movie that we're going to talk about here on Netflix since Amy's bringing stuff up. And that is our review of Netflix's stop motion animation feature, Wendell and Wild. This has been a movie, of course, that Netflix has been promoting for a while, especially since it has the inclusion of the famed director Henry Selick, as well as the illustrious writings and actings of one Jordan Peele and Keegan-Michael Key. So we're going to dive right into this bad boy. But before we do, Spencer, give us that official synopsis goodness.
Two seeming demons strike a deal with a punk rock loving teenager so they can leave the underworld and live out their dreams in the land of the living.
That's right. Short and sweet and to the point. Directed by Henry Selick from a screenplay written by Selick and Jordan Peele. The film stars Keegan-Michael Key and Peele as the titular characters alongside Angela Bassett, Lyric Ross, James Hong, and Ving Rhames. Unique moments about this movie are this actually marks the director's first feature film since 2009's Coraline. So if you're listening to this music and you're like, why does this sound like Coraline? It's because not only did the same director do this movie, but also the same composer.
Yeah.
What was his name, Amy?
Bruno. I cannot pronounce your last name.
Then
I think
let's
it's
not talk about Bruno.
Kulas.
Kulogs? No, those are what you wear.
C-O-U-L-A-I-S. Kulas? Kulis?
I don't know. It's from Bruno. This also is the second stop-motion animated film to be rated PG-13 by the MPA after Isle of Dogs in 2018. And finally, this is the second of director Henry Selick's films to be rated PG-13 by the MPA after 2001's Monkey Bone. Mm. If anybody saw that one. Brendan Fraser.
Yes, I remember
Brendan
Fraser.
I remember the monkey.
What?
So anyway.
Okay. uniquely enough about this movie, the soundtrack is actually comprised of all black rock bands or black fronted leads of rock bands in tribute to the rock band of the 80s, Fishbone. Also, Kat and Delroy, characters both in the film, both wear Fishbone t-shirts. And director and writer Henry Selick directed Fishbone's 1985 video, Party at Ground Zero, which is probably why that's, you know, they're so prominently displayed in the movie. Lastly about this movie, this is actually based on director Henry Selick's and Clay McLeod Chapman's unpublished book of the same name. So there's actually a basis for this story that nobody has been able to read yet. Hmm. But I'm pretty sure after the release of this movie and people watching it, they're going to want to find the book and they're going to publish it finally. So diving into this movie, as we go into our thoughts, I do want to let everyone know this is going to be a spoiler-filled review, so you have been warned. This is on Netflix. Everybody has Netflix. Everybody steals from someone who has Netflix.
If you haven't, crackdown.
Until they come for you.
Okay, cops. So if you haven't had a chance to see it, you should have already by now. It's been out for about a week. So, yeah. But diving in, this is definitely a stop motion animation film, one that is very unique to someone like Henry Selick, who famously created the much popular Halloween slash Christmas famed children's classic, The Nightmare Before Christmas. Mm-hmm. Much to a lot of people's surprise, this Nightmare Before Christmas is not a Tim Burton directed film. It is a Tim Burton written film, and he did create a lot of the characters. It's interesting how that kind of conversation goes, because Henry Selick himself has actually come forward on multiple platforms and outlets and have said he doesn't understand how people get that mixed up, how Tim Burton, yes, created the story and created the design and created the kind of vibe of the movie, but he directed it.
It's because the man has his name above the title.
Yeah, because I was about to say, I feel
it
like
says
I've
Tim
seen...
Burton's The Nightmare Before Christmas. Yeah. It doesn't say Henry Selick's, and I'm like, I don't like
that's
that.
That's exactly why.
But that's also in the same vein of like, you know, oh, Quentin Tarantino presents X, Y, and Z, or, you know...
But you also know that's a Quentin Tarantino movie.
No, not all the time.
The word presents feels different than... apostrophe S. It's possessive.
You know what? That was their
apostrophe is heck of possessive.
This just keeps coming back to English and has rules and you need to follow them.
Spencer's mad about grammar again.
Yeah.
So what I want to ask
every other
you,
week on the Film Monsters.
It's true. What I wanted to ask you guys, because when it comes to movies like this, obviously one of the key features that people really push are the usage of stop motion animation, which nowadays you do have an inclusion of stop motion with CG. Most stop motion films aren't solely just CG, which is fine. One of the most popular movies that utilized not only stop motion but practical effect work implemented CG as well, which is Jurassic Park. So, I mean, there's always going to be a mix of mediums, but when you think of stop motion, what's the first thing that you guys think of when it comes to the pinnacle of stop motion? Or if not the pinnacle, what stands out as a high point in stop motion for you guys?
Oh. Well, my brain, whenever we talk about stop motion, goes back to, and I consider him kind of the godfather of stop motion, Harryhausen.
Yeah, does he have a first name, or is it Harry and
no,
Housen?
I just want to say Harryhausen, you know, like in Monsters,
you mean
Inc.
Like the infamous Ray Harryhausen? Is that who you're talking about? Yeah. I love these quick 5-second Google searches before we jump onto
no,
this show.
No, because of it was not that. Okay?
I'm just kidding.
You're so mean.
I know.
But because the Seven Voyages of Sinbad and Clash of the Titans, the stop motion animation in there and the work and finding out even more every time I kind of get into one of those pits and I start researching how much hard work, dedication, time, and just grueling moments it took to create something. When it comes to stop motion animation, one
that
of the,
you've actually seen,
you're being rude, being so rude. There's two things I distinctly remember, especially being like in my lifetime, that I can pinpoint and go, the first time I remember seeing some, and then the one where I was just like, oh my gosh, this is so cool. The first time I remember seeing one was, of course, it's not Courier and Ives, whatever it was, the Santa Claus is Coming to Town, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Rankin and Bass.
Rankin and Bass. Why did I say Ives? I'm thinking the song in my head, Courier and Ives. Oh, Lord. Anywhoosky. The Rankin and Bass, which came out in like, what, the 60s? 50s,
60s? Yeah.
Why are you just laughing?
Because I love this heavy-handed like knowledge of stuff, but not too sure. And then Courier and Ives did, Courier, you know, had Bing Crosby come in to do, you know, yeah, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. And...
thanks. But I remember those being a kid and just being absolutely fascinated by them. So it was something really memorable. And now moving forward, very briefly, Kubo and the Two Strings. I remember seeing that for stop motion and crying because it was just so flippin' cool. And I'm going to pass the mic before I do.
Yeah, after she's already said everything about stop motion, let's go ahead and pass it over to Spencer for the little bit he can say about stop motion as Amy does her two-fingered salute.
For stop motion for me, like, it's not really, like, I haven't seen a lot, to be perfectly honest. Mm-hmm. Because, like, Yeah, I've heard of the Rankin Bass stuff, but I never actually watched it. Yeah, it was on. It would be on while, like, during the holiday season, and I flip to it. I'd be like, "What's this?" And then I'd flip away because I'm like,
"Yeah." But that was also in the before era where you didn't listen to music in movies and stuff like that. So it's understandable. I'll give you that, because the moment they would probably jump into a song, you'd be like, "Oh, no, this isn't for me," and click.
We're on the island.
Got it. Island toys. Next.
Yes. Exactly. Perfect examples.
That was good setup. I think, like, one of the first ones I can even remember watching is probably Chicken Run.
Yeah.
From like 2000. And I know I saw Coraline, which I love that
one. Yeah.
But I feel like there's one in there that I'm forgetting all of a sudden. But really, it's like literally.
And Nightmare Before Christmas. You've seen that.
Yeah, but that's not until recently.
Oh, okay. You're talking about the first ones.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, like, really, that's it for, like, back then. I did kind of see Kubo.
There you go. Yeah. I mean, Leica has made a more prominent name for stop motion in the more modern era. I mean, if you look at everything that Leica has created, Paranorman, the Box Trolls, you got Coraline, you know, you got all these ones that have come out since Leica has kind of taken that medium and put a new spin on it. But yeah, you have Rankin and Bass, who created all those great ones. You're missing, like, the little drummer boy and all that kind of stuff.
Santa Claus Coming to Town. There's an Easter Bunny one.
I'm sorry, are you still going? Because I know
I
you want
keep
to
going.
We don't want you anyway. The whole, you know, lovely intro of, you know, Ray Harryhausen over there. Amy did miss out on one of his more prominent works, which was Jason and the Argonauts, which took massive amounts of time for Ray Harryhausen to animate. Excuse me, what are you doing? You can't be
listening.
Uh-huh. she's messing with her microphone. So Ray Harryhausen actually did so much work for that movie. I mean, they had stated, like, some of those scenes took him months to finish, because it's, you're looking at like 24 frames per second. You're needing to move it probably every other frame. So that's 12 movements per second for like a 7 to 10 minute clip. That's an eternity, essentially.
Well, one of the interesting things, like, briefly, like, pivoting to this movie is, like, at the very end of the movie, how they, like, put like a little sample of them working on the movie.
Yeah.
In the credits. I was like, that's really cool that they even put that in here.
Paranorman actually does the same.
Oh.
Where at the very tail end of the movie after the credits, they show how they kind of fashion an armature with the clay and with the clothing. And then they show him how they kind of get to the point to where he walks up and just walks off by himself. And it's cool because, you know, that whole idea is a lost art, to be quite frank. Aside from Leica, unless you're perusing like Instagram or TikTok, where a lot of the people who are doing it through, like, just non-contracted, I guess, like amateurs and not really amateurs because they really do a great job, but like there are people who are putting work out there that's insane. Take, for instance, that guy that's on YouTube that does the stop motion Lego food preparations, like when he does like the sushi and he has a whole sushi tuna out there and he cuts it and it turns into steaks and it, like, that kind of stuff is insane and
also,
it's great.
That brings me back to what was that called, A Heist with Markiplier, where he had a section of his own thing that was like stop motionist, which is cool.
I mean, and it's one of those lost arts that people are starting to realize there is a sense of artistry and a sense of very sensitive care when it comes to creating that. Before, I just watched a movie recently called VHS 99, and that movie has interspersed with it like a stop motion animation kind of little Green Army Men, you know, little film that they do. It's like this kid who's doing it, but it's like back in the day, that's what you did. You took your picture, move, picture, move, picture, move, and kind of thing. And you would create that at home and it would make this like janky kind of awkward movement of your characters and whatnot. But it's what you had and it's what you did. And these people are taking that to a whole nother level. And you take everything from that and the creative work that went into this movie. Stop motion animation has been truly something that is underutilized, but at the same time, if done wrong, can look completely cheap, for lack of a better term, but done incredibly well. You get things like the emotional, you know, inducing Kubo, or the wonderfully whimsical Isle of Dogs, or you get, I mean, you get all the, especially all the great things that have come out of Laika, to be specific. I know one of Amy's favorite Laika movies is Box Trolls.
I do. I like Box Trolls. But yeah, no, I was good. I was going to also say they do the same armature sequence at the end of Box Trolls as well.
Mm. They probably do that at the end of most Laika movies, and we're just not aware. Mm. It'd be interesting to see. But yeah, so driving into this movie, yes.
I wanted to make one note that we forgot another stop motion animation studio that Spencer briefly brought up, which was Aardman, Aardman Animations. They were founded in the 70s, but they're the ones that did Chicken Run
and Wallace Pirates, and Gromit,
and all the Wallace and Gromit stuff.
Wallace and Gromit. That's why I was trying to, the yep. third thing I was trying
to say. Gromit. Cheese.
And yeah, I mean that, and that's from over the other side of the pond. That's been consistent, honestly, for decades.
There's a sequel to Chicken Run.
They're making a sequel. They haven't made it yet. Okay. They're in the process of making it.
It's supposed to be released next year. I'm scared.
Like I said, they're making it.
I don't want to be Pi.
So you take all that into consideration. Now, when it comes to this movie, Wendell and Wild, we all got a chance to see it on Netflix, and we have not talked about it at any length. So let's talk first impressions. I want to start with Amy. First impressions as soon as the movie was done.
There is a lot in here.
Yeah.
It is amazing and beautiful, and there is a lot in here. I need time.
There you go. Spencer.
Yeah, like, as soon as the movie wrapped, I was like, this is a movie that I feel like I could watch a couple more times and still find things in here.
Yeah.
Because, like, there was, like you're watching the movie, and then, like, in passing, it's like, oh, like if there's like a Jordan Peele thing where he's like pointing out something, I'm like, like I really need to rewatch this movie to really get like all of like the aspects I know he's getting at, because I probably miss some stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Same here. Like watching this movie immediately as soon as I was done, I'm like, this movie has so much of Jordan Peele's unique touch, especially from not only his own writing style, but also from his, you know, comedy sketches. And from what he was trying to see how he could fill into a children's movie. Because he was a big factor in the writing, obviously. He's one of the co-writers for the script. There was a lot in this movie. And honestly, and we'll talk about it as we go through this review, it kind of had me a little concerned. And like I said, we'll get to that, you know, point in a sec, but this movie was beautifully done. It had a lot of fun characters in it and a lot of fun acting. We just need to kind of unravel exactly what was going on within this film. So diving right into that, let's talk story direction. This movie went from 0 to 60 in the first like 5 minutes.
They wanted that up treatment.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, they're trying to go for up right now.
Yep.
Well, and the difference is that in this one, they actually show the parents die right from the get-go. There wasn't just like a drive off the edge and then you see the tail end of the car going into the water and then it's just quiet for a few seconds and then you see her pop up. It's like you see the struggle when they're, it's like that gave me a little bit of anxiety when, just like when Adam Savage did that on Mythbusters, when he did that whole go into a car, into the water, see if you can get out kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I'm like, you guys better not kill Adam Savage. He's a gosh darn treasure. Like, this is one of those scenes where it's like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. Like, you're watching this happen and you're really trying to see how how are kids going to process, like, no, go, we're right behind you. And they're not. And it's like, that's every child's fear when they're walking with their parents and they go a couple steps and they look back and like, oh no, we're right here, we're right behind you. Kid's gonna watch this movie and be like, not a window while their parents died, you're not gonna be here. Like, I can see that kind of situation coming up.
Wow.
Tell me I'm wrong. You have children. Tell me I'm wrong.
I mean, mine are old enough now to understand object permanence, but that, yeah, that moment was really like, when she's like, Mom, are you going to come with me? And she's like, I'll be right behind you, baby. And she said it with the confidence and the reassurance of a
and
mother.
And the calmness.
And the calm.
Oh, my God.
It wasn't even the fact that she's like, her dad is completely passed out. And then my brain was going, make sure the pressure is equal. Make sure the pressure is equal so you can get out and open the door. And then you're just like, and we're gonna surprise. I'm like, oh no.
Yeah, that scene alone, that beginning scene kind of really threw me. And then the kind of progression we see with Kat as she's going through, you know, her whole story. And then we get the whole, like, there's no kind of sheltering in this movie of kind of the evilness on the human level, like on the earthly plane. Evil is a very real thing. Mm-hmm. Like, you go down to, like, where what was the father's name?
Buffalo Belzer?
Buffalo Belzer, or whatever his name is. Like, that seemed very whimsical. That seemed very, like, Nightmare Before Christmas-esque.
Yes.
Up top, there's, like, talking teddy, like, haunted teddy bears, and, like, people who are getting symbols on their hands, and then the emotional trauma that's going on. Like, this movie was throwing some real heavy punches into, like, hey, by the way, this can be relatable, and we're going to show you how. Like, not even in the Pixar sense. Not like in the Disney, like, Disney movie sense. This was like, boom, we're going to make you relate to this child who just lost her parents and has been going through the juvenile detention system.
Yeah.
Yeah, they did do a great job of, like, without voiceover of, like, rapidly explaining, like, what her life has been
in
5 years, which I was like, that's a pretty cool sequence.
Which I thought the trailer, because the first trailer does a little bit of that in that very unique Naya DaCosta Candyman style of the shadow puppet kind of thing, which I thought was a unique touch. I'm pretty sure Jordan Peele brought that in to kind of reference that, which was cool. But then we get the way the sequence follows in this one. And we come to find out Kat is actually a Hell Maiden, or she's marked as a Hell Maiden. And, you know, all this creepy stuff starts happening to her. All the while, you have the whimsical, which, funny enough, the actual demonic entities are more whimsical, and it's a much more, like, lighthearted tale going on down there than there is going on the surface of the earth.
Yeah, that's the crazy part about this movie, is that, like, I would rather hang out with the demons than the people, some of the evil people in this movie.
Yeah.
Because, like, at least the demons, for the most part, are, like, not that, like, trickstery.
They're, I mean, for real, forward. Their whole goal is to resurrect people with hair cream. That's straight up Looney Tunes. Like, that seems something straight out of, like, A Merry Melody. You know, the idea of, like, oh, we'll just bring them back with this restorative hair cream.
And then they wanted to charge people for it so they could build a fair. That's
wanted to build, their own Scream Fair, just like their dad's, but so much better. And I was like, I can get behind your entrepreneurial spirit. Let's go.
I know. Like, for being demons, they had a great idea.
Yeah.
Their place looked fun.
It was interesting. And as the film progresses, I mean, you get into the kind of collision of, you know, Kat's demons, as well as what's going on the surface of the earth, which in that small town, they're actually being plagued by a very massive corporation who wants to pretty much demolish the entire town and create a private prison. Mm-hmm. No joke. That is literally the idea of the movie, is that there is a Trump-esque head of a corporation who wants to destroy a town so that he can build a private prison, so that way he can create a place where if the kids don't work out in the school that's at the top of the hill, they'll just mosey on down to the adult private prison.
Yeah.
Just making money off their backs all the day.
Like, that wasn't a, not ham-fisted, but, like, here, everybody that understands this, we'd like to point this out to you, how the system is failing our children, and it's the literal road from juvenile to private prisons, how we make money.
That's true. You're right. The literal road. Because it's, and they're not even hiding it.
Nope.
Like, they literally spell it out. When the daughter of the two conglomerates are like, is asking questions about it, like, I know the truth. Oh, you figured out our, you know, business plan. That's right. And then they have a model, and then the bus literally goes down to the school, to the prison. It's black and white, pretty much.
Literally, yeah.
And this movie does have a lot of like ups and downs. It has a lot of like roller coaster moments, and you know, people coming back from the dead, and you have real issues of like single moms who are like on the verge of losing their job because they're trying to figure out, you know, who murdered this prominent family in this small town. It sounds like a true crimes podcast.
Because it is, basically.
Well, and also she was trying to find out, she's in charge of the town council, who has been like, not even stonewalling. They've literally been like, no, the corporation's name is the Klaxon Corporation, which I thought was hilarious because a klaxon is a warning. And so it's literally like, it's the alarm, be alarmed at this
corporation. The alarm before the full, yeah.
And her entire goal is there was a fire at the brewery during Kat's parents, her father had a brewery, and her mother worked at the library. Mm-hmm. And it was like this idyllic little town where everybody knew everybody. Everyone was friends. But at their wake or their memorial. There was a fire that killed like a whole bunch of workers for the brewery. And that's the thing that she's trying to solve, is like, I just need somebody, because I can tell you right now, this looks super duper sketch.
Plus, you also have the situations within the school dynamic of like, you have a trans student. You have individuals who seem to be a little bit more flighty, or like the popular girls, the misconstruing of like the popular girls are always the bad guys, kind of trope. You have a lot of things that are going on, and you have the sister slash teacher nun who is trying to help Kat not become what she thinks she's inevitably going to become. There's a lot in this movie, and there's a lot of heavy points, and I hate to beat a dead horse, but the problems on the surface of the earth are much bigger than the problems that are going on in hell, which I'm assuming that's where that is. But my big question to you guys is, pertaining to this movie, do you think it missed the forest for the trees? Like the idea of it being a kid's movie, but then filling it with all the little minor things like that, the little social commentary points, because it would be one thing if this movie was a complete children's movie with minor moments that highlighted or had some parallelism or a metaphor to something in the real world. This movie had a lot of that, you know, everything from like even the design of the characters were meant to be designed in the tradition or the heritage, if you will, of the people they are. Like Kat's parents, her father kind of had that beaded look, the dotted look of on his beard, which is reminiscent of like African culture. The Native American woman who dropped off Kat, the way her lines were on her face was very much in tune with like the Native American culture as well. There was a lot of implementation of that and recognition. I didn't take a really good look at the Hispanic woman to see if there was any kind of thing like that, but her son, Raul, did really kind of embody the art culture of his heritage and made that very obvious at the tail end of the movie with his special project. It's one of those things where as much messaging they crammed into this movie, do you think that people will get more focused on the individual parts of it rather than the whole of it?
No. I think this movie, while there is a lot of stuff in it, I don't feel like a lot of the extra like commentary stuff really overshadows the main story here.
Really?
Yeah. Because I think, like, especially from a kid's perspective, I think a kid will be able to follow along with like the main story of this movie and not get too bogged down with like the extra things that are happening in the background or in the foreground for some stuff.
What do you think, Amy?
No, I actually kind of do agree with Spencer. And it's also taking it from a different approach that this isn't a children's movie. It is made and designed to be more of a preteen, teenager type of mentality, which means that you also have the wherewithal and the fortitude.
Ford Wright.
The yeah, maybe
Forthwith. You mean
Forthwith? There we go.
Forthwith.
Forthwith. You have the forthwith understanding that these are issues that you see around you. And I do agree that it can be, once you start, you choose to start picking and focusing on bit by bit by bit, you can miss the forest for the trees. But if you take it at the value of sitting down to just enjoy it or take it in, you'll be able to see the forest.
Let me play devil's advocate here for a second, because I'm on the fence still about it. And so it's easier for me to pitch the other side since there's a lot of conversations on one side of it already. Okay, if you're somebody who is already kind of, you know, barraged with what's going on in the news, what's going on in politics, what's going on in society, what's going on amongst, you know, liberals, you know, Republicans, Democrats, if you're already seeing this on just about every platform, including YouTube, you know, you're seeing it on, you know, whatever else you watch video on, like on Facebook, on Instagram, on TikTok, if you're already being bombarded with a lot of that content, you think it's really a smart choice to make an opportunity where you could give people a chance to separate from what's going on in the real world for a break and place it into a movie that people are going to honestly rush to because of the fact that you put names like, oh, The Nightmare Before Christmas is Henry Selick. Oh, Jordan Peele, the guy who did all those comedy sketches. Do you think it's a good idea to create a film, a stop motion film that you mentioned, Amy, is garnered for older teen or like older kids, preteens, teens, who also are kind of getting bombarded with a lot of this as well, not to mention the conversations from probably their parents or people that they know, into a movie that's supposed to be a respite from the real world?
Is it supposed to be that?
That is actually the better question, is it supposed to be a respite?
Well, and see, that's the thing. So that goes back to, what is the purpose of movies? And that's kind of where the question goes. Like, if I'm watching a Michael Moore Bowling for Columbine documentary.
But that's a documentary.
No, well, let me finish. If you're watching that documentary because you know I'm going to watch this documentary for that information, do you feel like it's not misleading to bring people in for this movie thinking it's just a fun, you know, type of stop motion movie? And mind you, don't look at me like you're going to kill me. I'm just playing devil's advocate here because Amy's about to reach over this table. What? But like the idea of this movie being a place where people are not only going to be reminded of everything, but they're also going to be given other people's perspectives on it.
Okay, so I'm going to be real honest. I have not seen a lot of the marketing for this movie.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure if what I'm about to say is just way off base of what everyone else knows. But like when I found out about this movie, I was like, I heard Wendell Wild, Jordan Peele. I was like, okay, like I know what I'm getting into just mm-hmm. based on that thing. Mm-hmm. So if they like kind of like pushed his name and like into the background, I might have missed like, you know, oh, it's just, you know, demons and stuff and a whimsical time for everyone, which okay. But I feel like really to get to the crux of your question, what are the purpose of movies? I feel like the answer to that question is that movies should have something to say. Like even the ones that aren't like, let's take the Fast and the Furious franchise, which I have not even seen all of. I know one of its core messages.
If you're going to find a core message.
Family.
Oh my God.
But like
that's just the one word that Vin Diesel uses in every movie.
Yeah, regardless, I am Groot. They
should put a trademark on that word for just the way Vin Diesel says it. Like he doesn't say family, he says family. Like that should be the trademark right there. All right,
well, family TM.
Family. I got friends. I got family.
I feel like pretty much some of the best movies on this planet, whether they're like serious commentaries or just fun flicks to watch, usually give like an audience something to say or something to like think about. And some of the worst movies are movies that have no voice of their own. And
you mean like Fast and the Furious?
I'm talking about like even what's like the worst movie I've ever seen?
Incredible Hulk.
Yeah, that's actually the incredible, like, why the amazing we,
why,
book.
Why?
Here's why. Because that movie was a ripoff of the
Incredible Hulk.
Yes, thank you. And then also, it really had nothing of its own to say. It was just a copy and paste movie.
That's a whole nother conversation in itself, because to compare Wendell and Wilde to the whims of the horrible Amazing Bulk are two different, like, eras. They're on two different planets. That movie had MS Paint backgrounds in it, Spencer.
You're not wrong. But, like, what I'm still saying is that it's still true of, like, what makes a good movie and what makes a bad movie.
Amy, thoughts? Please don't say I agree with Spencer. I
there is truth in what this man says.
Okay.
There is...
I meant to say just...
Don't
do
say
not
yes.
only just say I agree with Spencer and that's
it. I should have gone like, I agree with Spencer. Hey! No, there's truth in what you say, because I've always felt that movies, the goal of a movie is to tell a story. Mm-hmm. And every storyteller should have their own distinct voice. It doesn't mean that every movie is going to be 100% separate from the storyteller. It's not going to have tie-ins. But it should, a good movie should make, leave you thinking about something. Whether you are having conversations about the characters, the story, or a moment that really stuck with you, or a song that really stuck with you from the movie, it's the impact that it leaves on you. And while this movie, in the question of marketing, this movie kind of left it initial, and I didn't see any of the later marketing. I saw some of the earlier
marketing. A lot of the marketing was just stating it was riding on the fact that you had that it was riding on the idea that Wendell and Wilde were going to be played by Jordan Peele and Keegan-Michael Key, mm-hmm. and that it was directed by the Nightmare Before Christmas director Henry Selick.
Hmm. Well, and the one thing that I remember from all the trailers was Kat going, you think you have demons, my demons have names, and then it would go to the title. And that understanding was kind of tongue-in-cheek in the aspect, yes, they were demons, but also it's understanding that she has demons of her own and understanding trauma. And with this, I think it's a disservice to the preteens or the teenagers, assuming that they are going to be consistently, they're being consistently bombarded with the world around them, and they're not able to differentiate in the storytelling the call to action. And I've felt that even in this movie, the call to action was, and you've said it, Eddie, that we shouldn't be concerned with taking down the bad guys in the underworld. We should be, you know, more concerned about our community and taking out the evil that's rooted there. And that's a lot more present here as a call to action than it is an opportunity or a ham-fisted shove of social commentary.
I hear what you're saying.
He doesn't like it.
No, I'm, like I said, still with the mindset of just playing the devil's advocate. I'm throwing this out because I want to see where you guys stand on a lot of this. Because honestly, I mean, I'm pretty sure there's people who are going to watch it that are not as in tune with what is actually happening in the world. There's going to be a lot of people who watch the movie and are going to miss the forest for the trees, not for the right reasons,
but in the fact that short Donald Trump.
They're going to see short Donald Trump. They're going to see, the minorities being the victims. They're going to see, like, all these things that usually, and mind you, I'm using from the position of the devil's advocate. This is not my point of view. I'm just pointing out what other people's perspectives could be. People will see, oh, well, you know what? There's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of focus on just the minorities having a hard time. Or there's a lot of focus on, you know, this, the idea of so much trauma and psychology and therapy and stuff like that. And what I'm asking is, do you guys feel that there was a slight heavy hand within how much messaging there was put into this movie?
I'm on the fence about that.
Yeah.
Because, and to be totally honest, like I stated at the beginning, that there is a lot in this movie. There is. Do I feel that cutting something out would leave a hole that needed to automatically be filled by fart jokes or by eating hair cream jokes? No. I feel that this was
When was there a fart joke?
There wasn't. That's the point. Because there was the eating hair cream joke,
yeah. But I don't remember a fart joke.
But even then, it was, it still served a purpose of moving the story forward, even when they did it. And I think in the way that the story was set up, as much as there is in there, it didn't detract from the forest. It asked you to multitask as a viewer to be able to follow the storyline and also pick up everything else along the way, which can be difficult to a lot of people, I admit. It can also be very hard for people to not let go of something that they saw.
This is not a dig. It's simply a clarification, but do you guys understand the phrase missing the forest for the trees?
Yeah, you're staring at one tree and you forget to see everything around you.
So in comparison to this story, do you think people will be more hyper-focused on the individual messages or the individual statements that are being made as opposed to the story as a whole?
Dependent upon the person.
Yeah. Well, and that's what I'm asking. So if it
for
has...
For me as a viewer, no, okay. It did not detract. But for other people, is there a likelihood that it possibly could?
Yes.
Okay. There's always been a likelihood that could happen in any movie.
That's very true.
I mean, not for the Fast and the Furious movies, because it's about family. So
I haven't gotten to that junction. All I know is about drifting.
So taking the devil's advocate hat off now. In all honesty, I feel like this movie says a lot, and it has a lot of great messages. I feel like there is a slight bit of heavy-handedness, but I feel like the way that Henry Selick and Jordan Peele wrote the completion of this story rounds out what the hope of this messaging is about. Because you get this vision that a character has of the future, and it's a vision of a thriving town, of a reformed main character, of a new lot on life, so to speak, this focus of not being overcome by the big conglomerates or by the oppressive overseers, if you will, in society, and thriving on its own, under its own elements, under its own feet. I feel like there was a lot of thought that Jordan Peele, and I say specifically Jordan Peele because this has a lot of Jordan Peele's touch in the writing. Mm-hmm. I feel like there's a lot of touches that Jordan Peele makes throughout the story of this film in certain aspects, like you were saying with the klaxons, which, like you said, a klaxon is a warning, the unique resemblance to a once orange president, and the idea of the fallacy of the current day private prison system in the United States. Mm-hmm. I feel like those are all very obvious ones, as well as the focus of learning to own your past so that you can process through it, which we've talked about therapy on this show several times. Mm-hmm. That is a big part of learning to become bigger than the demons that are, you know, that plague you. I feel like, with all that said, I feel like this movie is much like Shrek in its day. This movie has a lot of great elements for kids. I feel like it has wonderful parts where preteens will get certain parts, but they'll love the story of it all and wanting to see everything come to fruition and just wanting to see the whole story complete. Older teens and adults will enjoy the story, but they'll also see the messaging. And like you said, Amy, the call to action to, you know, become active in your neighborhood, become active in your community, be aware that you don't have to be the person that you've already kind of imbued yourself with, the name that you've called yourself at the beginning of your trauma. Mm-hmm. You know, learning to process through, learning the importance of beating those demons back and becoming the new you, becoming the person that you choose to be. I just hope, and I want to, you know, mirror the same sentiment you said. I just hope that a lot of people who do see it are not more focused on that one tree for the sake of the whole orchard, or, you know, that one leaf for the sake of the entire glen. you know, because this is a beautiful movie. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of work that went into this movie. There's a lot of artistry in the stop motion. There's a lot of fun ideas and things that get executed on that look wonderful. And the gags are great. I mean, we haven't even talked about it yet with some of the performers, but we get great performances by James Hong. We get hilarious moments with Jordan Peele and Keegan-Michael Key, all reminiscent of like all the things they used to do during the Key and Peele skits. Like, I love those skits. And I was seeing like the what was that one? The one about the terrorists where they're literally on the plane and they have like these weird looking like haircuts and they're like, we're here for the terrorists. Like, they literally are like these messed up views of people who feel like they have to be like self-made warriors on planes to protect everybody from terrorists. And they're like, yeah, we got the 2-inch blade that's allowed by the airline people. And it's like, they literally have like a small razor blade and stuff like that because it was commentary on what airlines would allow but wouldn't, you know. And I was seeing a lot of that. I was seeing a lot of, what was his name? Wendolin? Did you watch a lot of Key and Peele?
I watched some of it. I didn't have cable.
Well, I've seen most of it on YouTube now. There was a really large guy who was like the typical gamer nerd or like the D&D nerd who was really big, and there was one that he did where he's like in his backyard doing a whole fantasy skit or whatever. There was a little bit of that in Wilds. Is that Jordan Peele's character?
Yeah,
Wilds. And it was fun. I just, like I said, I hope people can go past that part, but and not get fixated on the small minor parts like that.
Well, I mean, the nice thing is that even if they do get stuck on the minor parts and they realize that, they can just watch the movie again.
Yeah.
And then see even more, because like, there's a point where I was like, oh, a lot's happening and I kind of want to unpack this, but like, I'll put it away for now and just focus on the story.
Yeah. So. In terms of performances and in terms of people, I know we've kind of glossed over that, but I do want to still highlight some of those fun moments. Amy, was there anybody in terms of performance wise, and I have an idea of who you're going to pick, that you wanted to highlight their performance in the film?
I needed more Angela Bassett as Sister
Helly. That wasn't
Helly.
Who I thought you were going to pick.
I know, okay. Because the first person I would have said is
who someone you're going to say.
Father Lovell Bests. But I want to talk, that was his name.
Yeah.
But I do want to talk about Sister Helly, Angela Bassett. First off, she does not have enough screen time for me. I wanted more screen time.
She ever have enough screen time?
Never.
Not until we have like a live stream of just Angela Bassett talking to us and saying, how are you doing? How's it going? Doing like reprisals of all of her great roles, like moments from her movies. Like, that's what I want. I just want that.
But even for the time that we did see her, she carried, initially when you first meet her, you're like, oh, there's something sketchy about this. And then she carries when the time does come and you finally understand what her backstory is, who she is in relation. And even then, we don't get as much time to explore the world and get explanations, which makes me more intrigued and makes me want to watch it again. But she comes in as a conduit, as the seasoned Hell Maiden, to help assist Kat in not only owning her trauma, but partnering with her to share the pain, to be there to witness, and to continue to coach and move through. And I'm like, yes, yes, Angela Bassett. Yeah, yes, all of this, please. And even though it felt like it was a smaller part, it was no less profound than I expected for her to take up the mantle of, as it were.
Spencer.
Oh, let's see. There's so many people to choose from in this movie because lots of great people. I could even just start with like our main character, Kat. Like, I really liked what Lyric Ross did with her character. Like, gave like so much like texture to her like entire story. She did a fantastic job. I am very disappointed in James Hong and his character. He made me so sad. I was so happy to see him, and then his character was a conniving father. And I was like,
in the church, not like an actual father.
Yeah, conniving priest.
Yes. He was not the he's not the duck. He is not the goose from Kung Fu Panda.
Yeah, and then I think last person I want to talk about is Shoban by Tamara Smart.
Yeah. The daughter.
Yeah, the daughter of the Claxons. She was not what I was thinking she was going to be at the beginning of this movie. Because, like, she kind of just instantly filled in, like, that, like she seemed like she was going to be like that, oh, I'm so nice, but I'm actually a mean girl.
Exactly. Yeah. With her goat. That goat was money in the bank for me.
Like, I was certain at some point that that goat was going to turn into, like, a hell beast or something.
Exactly.
I was hoping. I'm not going to lie. I was really hoping.
But no, she's actually just a nice girl with a goat.
She just happens to be a nice girl with a goat.
Yeah, and then the second she found out her parents were into something nefarious, she's like, oh no, we're not doing this. And I was like, oh, this is probably one of the more surprising roles in the movie for me. What about you, Ed?
I feel like one of the best parts of the movie, obviously, was Wendell and Wilde talking about Keegan-Michael Key and Jordan Peele, their interactions. It has been so long since we've seen them to come together on any format since their show departure.
Keanu.
That was during their show.
I thought it was at the end.
It was during their show.
Oh.
And even after that, like we it's been years, honestly. And we've seen Jordan Peele do really fun and amazing things with his directing and his writing. We've seen Keegan-Michael Key really shine in the independent film era, like the genre, and do voiceover work. Keegan-Michael Key is the voice of, what's his name, from Teen Titans. Yeah, in the animated, the recent animated one.
He is not Cyborg.
Yeah.
No, he's not.
Are you sure?
I will scroll right now, and if I am wrong, I will find
it. Teen Titans Go?
Yeah. Now we're all
the last, because the last time I remember them teaming up was Toy Story 4.
Yeah.
When they were Ducky and Bunny. I can't complain about that, though. That was great.
Man, we're all looking for this.
Yeah, we are Googling. It we are Googling hard because I've got Robot Chicken. I've got Super Mansion, Modern Family.
Wow, then I'm wrong.
Yeah, because not the bad. Person that does. Yep, he's heckin' up. The person that does. He's the narrator for Green Eggs and Ham. That's nice. Yeah, he is definitely not the voice of Cyborg.
I thought he was. It sounded like him.
No.
But all the stuff like you said, we got a chance to see him in Toy Story 4. But not a lot. It wasn't like what we're used to with the normal type of like their skits and the way they usually interact. It was a very abbreviated version of it. Apparently he's in Pinocchio. Oh, cool.
Yay.
But you know, with seeing a lot of their work, having them together and it being essentially a mirror of their actual selves in demon form and really kind of putting on the charm as the comedic duo in a sense like this, like it very much felt like an Abbott and Costello in costume kind of type of performance. And it was good. It was fun. It was unique. They weren't the leads. They were the accents to it, to the story. And I have to appreciate that. I really do. But aside from them, honestly, I feel like one of the better performances that really is not going to get talked about as much is... the role of Raul by Sam Zelaya. I feel like Raul played a really... The performer that voiced this character did such a great job of creating that uncertainty yet introvert and still willing to be, you know, welcoming to new people kind of character. There was a lot of nuance to the character and it really did shine through. It wasn't a bombastic performance in terms of like, oh, look at me, but it was very much like, I am somebody who is learning to accept myself and learning to grow into my shoes. And people who are different like me may understand. And let's see if we can welcome them into this fray as well, which is exactly how the journey for Raul and Kat go. It was just filled with a lot of people. And James Hong was hilarious. I mean, the fact that he dies and comes back from the dead and looks like himself from Big Trouble in Little China.
Yes. I was so appreciative of that. I was like, yay, look at you looking so good.
Talking about this film as well, did you guys have any issues or were there any highlight moments for this film?
For ridiculous, just like silly moments, I do want to point out the other two penguins. Sister Chinstrap, and I cannot remember the other sister's name.
I have no idea.
But they literally look like penguins, these little tiny short sisters. And whenever Father Best has a problem, he alerts the penguins and they come running. But they had an entire sequence where Raoul and Kat have detention, and they have to write, "I will not hold," or "I will not take hostages," or "Thou shalt not have hostages" on this whiteboard. The sequence in the scene where it sits up and it does this long run down this wall, and it's got framed paddles from like the years that they were retired. And I was like, oh, that one looks like the one that was at my private school. And then you get down to the bottom and they're sitting at this table and they're both in these chairs and they have one accordion between the two of them. And they're just playing a jam and they're rocking back and forth. And it was so, so ridiculously silly, but so lovingly and just earnestly done that I'm like, I think I might love them. Like, this is really dumb, but it was so, it carried such brevity, because on one, it's a two-sided chalkboard and you see Kat on one side and she's writing, and even her handwriting is so distinct and angry, and you can tell it's hurried, it's quick, it drops off in places. And on the opposite side of the board, you have Raoul, who is literally meticulous and has been going through the motions and creating it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this is such a great juxtaposition, not only to see them as characters and how they are and who they are for the personalities, but the nuns were just like so ridiculous and so sweet. And I could not help it that I liked this sequence so much. And there's another one, but I don't want to take it if, in case somebody mentions it.
Spencer.
So this isn't an issue or a highlight. This is just something I've noticed because I like to overanalyze things.
It is true.
Yeah, so I want to talk about the town and its laws. They make no sense because one of the plot points of the movie is that the Claxons get Wendell and Wilde to raise the old council members from the grave so they can vote for Claxon to like move into the town. And like this whole time, I'm like, well, that's not going to work. They're dead.
Exactly.
Like, term's over. And so then the whole town meeting comes and they vote and they're like, isn't there something in the rules against this? And she's like, no. And I'm like, I'm so sorry. What do you mean there's not? There's so many things that should have stopped this from happening. And like, I've never wanted to read laws of a town that didn't exist more than I wanted to right then and there. Didn't matter at all. Just something that was like on my, this is ridiculous, but I like it.
See, and in that moment, my thing that was making me wonder about that was because the two little old church ladies that were in there, first off, they literally were the Key and Peele sketch.
Yeah, they were.
They looked exactly like them. And they're like, oh, if the devil comes up, I was like, oh, please just say it. Just say it. When the old guard comes in and they name off other people and you go, you're alive? And he nods. And I was like, is that how you get around it? Is that how you get around it? Oh my gosh. That, and then when they were protesting and they had the two little church ladies had their crocheted knitted like hand sign of like down with Claxon and they're each holding a pole. I was like, I love you so much. Oh my gosh.
Eddie? Was that it?
Yeah.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure. I feel like one of the things I really want to highlight was, and it's something so, you know, inconsequential that people probably wouldn't even notice it, but when you go back and you really rewatch it, you're like, oh, that was actually pretty cool. I want to highlight the journeys to the surface. Like when Wendell and Wilde take that carriage up to the surface of the earth, and then when Buffalo Belzer goes to the surface as well, and it turns into this side view of the earth's crust, and you see them like coming up this like wormhole that is already, looks like it's already been previously made. And the first time you see it, you see Wendell and Wilde, and something happens, and a rock, straight out of Looney Tunes, a rock blocks the way, and it redirects them to another part of the cemetery, which starts the shenanigans for Wendell and Wilde and everything going on. And then you have the scene where Buffalo Belzer comes up, and you're seeing him coming up through the surface, and it's like this massive, like he defiles all these graves all at once as he pops through the surface of the earth. And I just remember like looking at that, I'm like, that's smart. That's funny. Being able to like, you see all the bugs, you see all the bones, you see like fossils in the earth as they're going through. That's old school stop motion. And that's cool. I really appreciated that, having to go through all the painstaking details of including all those little parts, incorporating a actual like prop gag where they get redirected because a rock falls on the place in the journey that they're going. I don't know. For me, that screamed classic like honoring. And I thought that was cool. I don't know if you guys remember those parts.
Yes. Just, well, I remember those.
You're looking at me like I'm just...
No.
it was really cool. I know that part was fun. And then the incorporating of the scene that we see in the trailer that we see in full in the movie, which is that reminiscent of the Naya DaCosta's Candyman, the shadow puppet kind of journey that Kat goes on and sees things. That was really cool. And I really appreciated that callback because Jordan Peele helped produce that movie. So you know that was an homage to that. And it was cool. I half expected like Candyman to show up like in that scene because it was just so great. But those were really cool highlights. And yes.
I have one more since someone brought it up.
Go ahead.
Raul's art project.
Oh, yeah.
We cool. see a brief glimpse of it at the beginning before Kat gets to the school. And it's beautiful there. And then when Raul actively goes in, does the work, first off, when he's doing the work on the, like, to literally blowtorch away the snow to do the one piece, and you're like, okay, that's cool. And then the final reveal, it is so gorgeous. And I'm like, not only did somebody design this one originally on paper, much like Raul did, but they ended up applying it to a literal town. And I'm like, oh, you were so busy. You were so busy, young fella. I love it.
And that part, which I had alluded to earlier, is actually a really big part of the kind of conclusion, if you will, to one part of the story, which is a really great touch. And it hits on the folklore and heritage of the Latino culture, which is really great. And you have to see that part to really kind of get the fullness of it. I don't want to spoil that part. But it does bring me to our roundtable question. And this one's kind of a simple one, but still has a lot of implications in terms of what we've seen with streaming services. And so, due to the nature of most streaming services and their money-hungry selves, do you feel that this movie warrants a sequel? And whether or not if it does, do you think Netflix will do it?
So, does it warrant a sequel? That depends on if they feel like there's a story for a sequel, really. Because, like, let's say before Toy Story 2 came out, I was like, there doesn't need to be a Toy Story 2. Toy Story 1 was great. Mm-hmm. And then Toy Story 2 was phenomenal. And I would have missed out on that if it was just based on that. So, like, if people think they have an actual story, then they should put it out.
Now going back, so hold on. Mm. Pause.
Okay.
Cross on the fingers. because we've talked about this before with Halloween Ends. And we've talked about how the continuation of some franchises or some films typically don't necessitate an actual sequel and they're good on themselves. Do you feel like with what you've been given alone in just this movie, do you feel like there is enough information out of this that could create the, I guess, egg, if you will, of a sequel?
I mean, I think so. Okay. Especially since Kat has like, that's so Raven powers now.
Oh my God.
Great one. That's so good. So true.
Because since we know that she sees in the future that the town comes back, it hasn't come back yet. There could be some bumps along the way of getting the town back together. So that could be like a plot point for a story. And like, she is a Hell Maiden, whatever that truly means.
Yeah.
And you could flesh that out more.
True.
And like, because like, so far, a Hell Maiden seems like a real stupid deal for the human. Mm-hmm. Because like, it seems like it's only positives for the demons. Like,
I think that's kind of the idea.
Yeah, but
Hell
like...
Hell Maiden?
Well, then
maiden
what's the hell? Point? Just say no. Like the drug campaign. Just say no to demons.
Okay, Nancy Reagan, take it easy.
Just say no to demons.
Wow. So I'm assuming your answer for both of those is yes.
Well, I also wanted to point out Netflix specifically has been downsizing their animation department. Mm. So I have no idea if they'd be interested. Like, this movie would have to do like bonkers well for them to even be like, oh, maybe there should be one.
Or get bought out by Disney and then it goes over to Disney Plus. Because let's be frank, Monkey Paw produced this movie. Monkey Paw belongs to Jordan Peele. I'm sure that they're going to want to bolster that side of their, you know, category list of works, you know, whatnot, whether if it's media and TV shows or movies. Disney might make an offer. Who knows?
Maybe. They have been surprisingly, I'll say loose, even though I don't feel like that's true, with how what's been on Disney Plus. Like, things I would thought, oh, Disney would never put this on Disney Plus for a million years. This seems like a Hulu show. Shows up on Disney Plus.
There you go. What about you, Ames?
So I, this might be the I'm mostly agreeing with Spencer moments for this entire episode. There are, Coraline, I think, probably is the perfect example that I can lay out. Mm. Because Nightmare Before Christmas has had additional story progressions through books. There is Long Live the Pumpkin Queen that just came out, which is a book focused on after the events of The Nightmare Before Christmas, Sally and Jack get married, and the progression.
Sally becomes the Pumpkin Queen.
Becomes the Pumpkin Queen and all of that entails. Coraline stands in and of herself or the property itself that it has space to tell more stories, but it's not necessary. Mm. And in choosing to not tell more, tell additional stories, it makes that piece a more, I want to say treasured, mm-hmm. A treasured like moment in time. And with this, there is so much that's being said. There is so much that's being given to the audience that I personally don't feel that it's necessary to, pardon the pun, flesh it out anymore. Because there is a book forthcoming that's right, still unpublished that will probably give more space or more like guidance in relation to the movie, which the Coraline book does simultaneously for the movie as well. So
because there's no Coraline is a Neil Gaiman book,
correct?
And there's no other sequels to that book, correct. Right? Okay,
yeah.
Amy is also on top of being a comic book expert. She's also one of the Neil Gaiman go-to people for.
I'm part of that fan club. It's a nice one. Yeah, so there's not another book that came out after that, and I don't think it was absolutely necessary with regards to this. Mm-hmm. I like where it ended. And it is not saying that Kat does not have more stories to tell, nor does the now regrowing population and city or town of Rusty Banks. But I like leaving it on that note of hope and not having to worry excessively about what else is happening.
So what I'm gathering from you is that you agree with Spencer, but you don't because you think that there's a...
I agree with Spencer. There's an opportunity, but the choice is if it's up to me, I wouldn't want
okay.
an additional
so
one.
You wouldn't want another sequel.
I...
Do you yes. think Netflix will try to flesh out one, as your pun intended?
No, I don't think they will.
Really?
And I will say this from the bottom of my horrible, horrible, hopeful heart. Stop motion not only takes a lot of time, but a lot of money. Mm. And unless they came out the gate being a number one top 10 across the world, they weren't going to get greenlit for any type of a sequel. And yeah, they're willing to take risks to an extent, but unless you blow it out of the water, you're never going to see a backup to that. Perfect example was Squid Games. Squid Games came in as a dark horse and suddenly it blew up. And they're like, how many more Squid Games can we get for you, buddy?
Let's do a game show with it,
too. Let's do a game show. Let's do this. Let's do that. If it had not had that type of international recognition, they would not have greenlit anything.
Mm-hmm. I feel like this movie is one of those types of movies where doing it fully the way they did it was just right. It's the whole Three Bears situation. It's not too cold. It's not too hot. It's just right. The right amount of messaging, the right amount of flirting with that line of fearfulness for young children, to where it's something that can be immediately whisked away by making the demon seeming more whimsical and fun and silly. I feel like a sequel on top of that, yes, there's enough information to create it, but should you create a sequel? Probably not, because then you're going to have to reinvent the wheel again on how well you can put and push not only your unique story, but also your unique messaging. And if it mirrors the first one, or it pushes more messaging than story, or if it pushes more story than messaging, immediately people are going to say, this is not like the first one. It's not the same. It's different. It's whatever. Somebody, you know, gave in to the man kind of thing, you know, and I just, I feel like it wouldn't be the safest choice. That said, Netflix has never been about making the safest choices, especially with some of their stockholder meetings and the outcomes they're in as far as their quarterly, you know, results for finance wise. I feel like if this even gets an inkling of notability and promotion, like you have, if you have Jordan Peele pushing this, if you have people who like Henry Selick, if Tim Burton jumps on the train and is like, yeah, this is great, you should check it out, blah, blah, blah. I feel like Netflix is going to smell blood in the water, and they're going to want to try to push for that because they feel like if they are newer and edgier, and they're not only doing like the Dahmer series that's really pushing that, you know, line, but if they can do that with kids shows and really create an element of like, hey, if we make these shows that have this like really big messaging on social commentary, let's double down on that next time and blah, blah, blah. I feel like they'll do it. Because I feel like that's just the nature of who Netflix is, because they're really hurting for stealing viewers from all the other platforms, all the other streaming services. So, with that said, let's go ahead and go around the table. Does the film pass or fail, and how many monocles? Let's start with Amy.
Why did I see that coming? This film passes for me. It does have a beginning, middle, and end, and I'm not saying that just to be like, oh, I hated it. If you're looking for macabre whimsy that will leave you wanting additional viewing simply because there is so much in there that you want to stare at the background and you can't help but go, oh my gosh, this is so cool, this movie is 100% for you. The cast is wonderful, and the story has something to say, and it doesn't shy away from things that we should be focusing on. I will give it a 3.6.
I feel like I have to add a drum roll there. Like,
just don't eat too much magic.
I'm sorry, how many monocles?
3.6 out of 5.
3.6?
Yes.
Okay. Spencer!
This movie passes for me. It was really just a beautiful movie to watch because, like, the art style I really loved. And it's been a while since I watched a stop motion movie, so that's always a nice plus,
especially one that didn't have a lot of music in it. Like singing moments.
I'm getting better about the singing
you
thing.
you are I'm just saying, it was,
I'm
like
starting to listen. Although, like,
you hear that, Mrs. Williams? You hear that? He said he's starting to listen.
Although I will say, subtitles do help a lot.
That is true.
Yes, they do.
Spencer found that out the other day when he was watching the sing along version of The Nightmare Before Christmas.
I was like, oh, I should have done this from the beginning.
There you go.
But yeah, for this movie, yeah, beautiful movie, great cast, and it was just, it was a fun watch. I had fun. So for me, it's going to get 4 out of 5 monocles.
Yay. There you go. This movie also passes for me. This is one of those movies where it questions a lot of what I feel can be placed into kids' movies. We've had that question before, like I mentioned, with like a lot of DreamWorks movies and especially Shrek and all those movies. And this is just another level of intelligence that's added to movies where people can actually be okay with their kids watching it because they're learning to, as Amy so aptly put, answer the call. I really do appreciate a lot of the subtle parts and not so subtle parts that were included in the writing of this movie. And I have to say, this is something that I would definitely want to revisit and re-examine for what I, like Spencer said, missed the first time around, to kind of make sure I really grabbed the full gist of what the writers were trying to say. It's definitely one that fits the macabre genre, if that's your whimsy, or if you're a fan of The Nightmare Before Christmas but want a more updated kind of vibe of it, that's what this movie has. In terms of monocles, I am going to give it a 4 out of 5 as well. I feel like this movie has a lot to say, and it has so much in it in terms of fun, fun acting, fun moments, silly fun. I actually want to know what hair cream tastes like now. Yeah. I probably won't eat it, but I'm just saying, this movie makes you question the things that you ate. So I'm going to leave this episode with pica. But yeah, this movie gets a 4 out of 5 for me. And if you haven't had a chance to, you should head over to Netflix to check it out and watch it while it's still available. But yeah, this was a great episode of the Filmlosophers. Remember, you can check us out over at our website at filmlosophers.com. There we have over allegedly 300 episodes, everything from action, comedy, romance, horror, even conversations about the industry. If you're looking for it, we got it. Head on over to our website at filmlosophers.com. You can also check us out over wherever podcasts are streaming, whether iTunes, Google Play, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, iHeart. I'm running out of breath just saying all of these. You can tune into your heart's desire wherever we are. Listen in, give us a follow, give us a subscribe, and let us know how we're doing. Give us a comment in our in the line section down below, and give us a 5-star review. I feel like we've earned it.
We have.
That's right. Also, you can check us out over on the socials at facebook.com/filmlosophers or over at Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101. There we post as often as we can, not as regularly, but as often. And we got a lot of great stuff there, including some of Spencer's big scores and Amy's.
What, Jane and Teen?
Exactly. I threw that to you to see if you were paying attention.
I was paying attention because the only place it ever lives is on Instagram.
At?
Jane and Teen.
There you go. This was a great...
I was listening.
Oh, yeah. Sure you were. Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
But this was a great episode. And like we said, when it comes to children's movies, when it comes to opportunities to really kind of inform your child about what is going on in the world, sometimes the best place to do it is by using mediums that they can best understand. And let's be honest, if you take a look at a lot of kids' movies nowadays, there are messages and there are undertones to it. Find the right ones. Find the ones that'll speak to your children in the way where they, as Amy so aptly put, can answer that call. So check it out on Netflix. It was great. But like I said, that wraps up another great episode. So from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
I'm still intern Amy, maybe.
Class dismissed.